And a happy Wednesday. It's the Y'all Show, broadcasting across the Southland and also available in podcast form if you are one of those who catch us each and every day on Spotify or the iHeartRadio app or TuneIn or perhaps Apple iTunes or Apple Podcasts. We thank you so much for listening. And please go back. We had a really awesome, I mean, most of our shows, honestly, let's just be real here. Every one of our shows is awesome. But we had an awesomer show on Tuesday. We had Todd Starnes, the national radio talk show host. He was on our Tuesday program, and the Takapola Storyteller was on doing his thing on our Tuesday show. So if you missed that, then you have a couple of different options to go in and hear the Y'all Show in our podcast availabilities: Spotify, iHeartRadio, the TuneIn app, as well as Apple iTunes and Apple Podcasts. Plus, you can always find the Y'all Show at y'all.com. That's the South's official homepage, and we have a whole section devoted on our homepage to this program we call the Y'all Show. Well, I hope you're doing well today. It's going to be a day full of international headlines. It's going to be a day full of some gossip coming out of Nashville, Tennessee. We've got a country music, well, she was a country music starlet. She's decided that country's not good enough for her, but even some more news coming in today on Maren Morris on the personal front. We'll tell you all about that in our headlines across the Southeast today. Also on this Wednesday edition of the Y'all Show, in addition to headlines, in hour number one, we've got our hashtag Huddleblue. And in hashtag Huddleblue, we will tell you about a restaurant in the southern state of Ohio. Ohio, come on. But it looks like there is at least one person in Ohio that recognizes how awesome the South is. And they've got a restaurant called A Taste of Memphis. And I'm going to tell you what's on the menu at this Ohio restaurant when you go there to visit A Taste of Memphis. All that's coming up in our hashtag Hullabaloo. Plus, we've also got someone talking about Flannery O'Connor, the writer out of Georgia. We'll tell you more about O'Connor and the life that she lived, all part of our hashtag Hullabaloo forthcoming here in our opening hour. In hour number two today, you make sure you stay tuned. In addition to headlines, we also have food to talk about. And we've got an awesome food selection today. As I have kind of been on a seafood mode, a seafood modus operandi here this week, after going to the Atlantic Ocean over the weekend and having an incredible seafood and hush puppy dinner, you could say, there was something else included when I was there at Bowens Island, and it was a little cup of coleslaw. And so today, I'm going to dive in hour number two into our big question. I mean, this is a big question that's been on my mind for a while. And the question is, why do we often have coleslaw with seafood? What's the reason behind that? I'm going to tell you that reason when we talk a little southern food in hour number two. And also, in honor of Bowens Island, I've got a great recipe that I found for South Carolina slaw. What in the heck makes up South Carolina coleslaw? Well, there's a recipe specifically titled South Carolina slaw that I'm going to tell you all about when we have our southern food conversation in hour number two. Plus, in hour two, we've got our southern business spotlight, and I'm going to let you in on some news that broke on Tuesday in regards to General Motors delaying EV pickup, the expansion of EV pickups within the GM line. You know, they got a lot of problems with our EVs, period, and then you mix in this UAW strike. It's not looking good for EVs right now across the world. So we will talk about that in our business headlines of hour two. And we also have someone from Yahoo Finance chiming in on this whole EV discussion. All that forthcoming in hour number two of the Y'all Show. So let me also let you know how you can get involved with the program All About Dixie. You can text us. We have a text line available 24/7. And that number to text us on is 615-208-4184, 615-208-4184. You can also email us. Our email address here at the show About the South is mail, mail@y'all.com. That's how you can drop us recipe ideas. If you've got maybe a feature that you want us to spend some time on, and we do that. We've got people suggesting stuff to us a lot, and I'm going to squeeze in those suggestions as we go forward. So no idea is a bad idea at the Y'all Show. We are Y'all's with a S on the end. We are Y'all's show, and we aim to please here on the show that shakes the Southland. Well, let's dive into a few headlines here for our opening hour, and then we'll move over into, before we get out of here for opening hour, we will go over to hashtag Hullabaloo. So let's start off with the international story. Right now, President Biden is in Israel. He just had a meeting with the leaders of Israel in Tel Aviv. He's also met with Americans whose family members have been killed by Hamas in that deadly attack from two Saturdays ago. And then the big question, or the big story that's kind of questioned by some, is that the fact that I was watching yesterday when a member of the Israeli Defense Force was being interviewed live on television. And when he was going to be pressured about the strike that hit a Gaza hospital and more than 200 people killed in that hospital blast, this Israeli Defense Force member, who's a spokesperson for him, I know his first name is Jonathan, which is a great first name. I don't know his last name, but he's been on TV a lot here lately. And Jonathan from IDF really surprised, I believe it might have been Jake Tapper, who was interviewing him on Tuesday when Tapper was going to turn the screws on him for this hospital blast that has killed hundreds in Gaza. Out of nowhere, this IDF spokesperson essentially said, well, we didn't do it. We've got definitive proof that we didn't do it, and here's what happened. And today, more empirical evidence coming out of Gaza that just might show that that hospital strike was not actually done by an Israeli missile, that it was actually a bomb, or missile rather, from Gaza that was supposed to be heading into Israel, that the thing went off prematurely and fell down and exploded on the hospital. That's what the big talking head subject is today. And according to a lot of the retired American military experts that are on some of our TV channels, they say that many of the weapons that the Gaza fighters are using to launch strikes into Israel are coming from very old and dilapidated Iranian missiles and Iranian rockets and more. And they don't work. I think I saw where they've already charted more than 200 failed missile launches or rocket launches from Gaza into Israel. And the reason this thing at the hospital was so awful was because where this thing was launched was not far from the hospital, and it was jammed up with lots of fuel. And so since it had only traveled a short distance before going off prematurely, that's what led to a lot of the explosion at the hospital site. It was well stocked with gasoline. Again, I don't claim to be an artillery expert, but that's the story today. And that is going to counter what for 24 hours was a positive for the Palestinians. It means they were getting a lot of sympathy around the world, and there were a lot of strikes and a lot of protests that had been going on in support of Palestine after what looked like an Israeli missile went into this hospital. But right now, the fog of war remains over Gaza, and we'll just have to find out if indeed this was a rocket from Gaza gone wrong and it went on their own people as we investigate this thing further. But right now, there is a bit of a question mark about this particular hospital strike. There's no question mark that America, it appears, stands firmly behind Israel. That's why Joe Biden has traveled to Tel Aviv today. He was supposed to go to Jordan, and a meeting there got canceled. U.S. aircraft carriers are in the Eastern Mediterranean right now, and they're just to, I assume, try to get things calmed down as soon as possible. But the ball is kind of in Israel's court. Is Israel going to invade the Gaza Strip? Are they going to have a land war? and go into the tunnels and try to eliminate Hamas? Are they concerned that if they try to do that route, that the Hezbollah fighters coming in from Lebanon are going to seek revenge and come across the northern border of Israel and Lebanon into Israel? All questions that are out there, and the world response out there to the question of that, and is this going to get heated up even more than it already has? Tough times right now. Tough times here in America, and that's why we have other headlines to tell you about on today's Y'all Show. And here's an update out of Alabama. And this has been a case that's been going on for a long, long time, since 15 years ago, something like that. And the chief suspect in the Natalie Holloway 2005 disappearance, been 18 years now. The chief suspect, Joran Vandersloot, who's now 36 years old, is going to be in court Wednesday morning, today, and he's expected to plead guilty in Birmingham to trying to extort money from Natalie Holloway's, her mother, and provide new information about what happened to Holloway back in 2005 when, on a senior class trip, she went missing in this Caribbean island where she was on this senior trip. Joran Vandersloot is charged with extortion and wire fraud, and today he's going before a federal judge for a plea and a sentencing hearing. Vandersloot is not charged in Holloway's death. He is charged with trying to extort $250,000 from Holloway's mother, Beth, when in 2010 he tried to get that money to reveal the location of her daughter's remains. Natalie Holloway went missing during that 2005 high school graduation trip to Aruba, as she was there with classmates from Mountain Brook High School, and she was last seen leaving a bar with Vandersloot. A judge has declared her dead, but her body has never been found. And today, Vandersloot, who killed his girlfriend in one of the South American countries and was in jail there before being extradited to Alabama in recent months, he's got an opportunity today to do the right thing, if indeed he is the killer of Natalie Holloway or knows more about her disappearance. Another Alabama story to tell you about in our headlines today. The U.S. Senator from Alabama, the senior senator from Alabama, Tommy Tuberville, said he's received more than a dozen death threats during his time in the United States Senate, and four people have now received jail time for threats on Tommy Tuberville. Tuberville this week was on the Kimberly Guilfoyle Show, which streams on Rumble. I didn't know that. And in this interview, Tuberville commented on several subjects. And in that discussion with Guilfoyle, the girlfriend of Donald Trump Jr., by the way, he said that he had been the recipient of several death threats. And people now in jail because of that. You don't mess with Coach Tommy Tuberville. Tuberville mentioned a lot of other things going on, including his support of Jordan for U.S. House Speaker. And that was a failure on Tuesday for him to receive enough Republican votes to become the U.S. House Speaker, Jim Jordan of Ohio. Tuberville, in that interview with Guilfoyle, says that we've got an empty White House. When President Trump left the White House, if we would have just left it empty, we would have been so much better just in our country with the border, inflation, fossil fuels. And I've heard him say that a couple of times, Tommy Tuberville. Guilfoyle, she actually flattered the former Mississippi, Auburn, Texas Tech, and Cincinnati head coach by saying that he was the greatest coach of all time. Ooh, I don't know if that's a good thing for Auburn or Mississippi right now. The greatest coach of all time, I'm sure others would have something to say about that, especially in the heart of Dixie, or at least half the state. I'd have to say Alabama's probably got a 65-35 edge in terms of fan support. That's my very unscientific And it's definitely that way right now. Auburn reeling from a loss here to LSU. They've lost to Texas A&M. They might lose this week when another guy that comes in that's got a large mouth, not a bass, but a person, and Lane Kiffin arrives on the Plains this weekend in a battle of coaches who have spent time in Oxford, one still there. So we'll keep our eye on the greatest coach of all time, arguably the greatest senator of all time. Now, that's going to get some hate mail coming to me now, maybe even a death threat or two. All right, let's tell you about a story that has developed in the state of Georgia. A man who spent 16 years in a Florida prison after being wrongfully convicted was killed this week in Georgia by a sheriff's deputy in Kingsland, Georgia. 53-year-old Leonard Allen Cure has been identified by the Georgia Bureau of Investigation as the victim, as he was killed by the sheriff's deputy during a traffic stop Monday. His death confirmed now. And again, he's the same guy who was convicted on a wrongful conviction. As the GBI said, a Camden County, Georgia deputy pulled over the driver along I-95 near the Georgia-Florida line. The driver got out of the car at the deputy's request, but he became violent after he was told he was being arrested. And after trying to subdue him and using his stun gun and baton, the officer ultimately drew his gun and shot the 53-year-old Leonard Allen Cure, and a man who had been in jail 16 years after being wrongfully convicted, enjoying his freedom, and now his life comes to an end. This incident on the Georgia-Florida border being investigated, and we'll find out more about this tragic loss and what led this man. I'm sure he was very on edge after being locked up 16 years for the wrong reason, with law enforcement harassing him. And unfortunately, his life comes to an end this week. That one definitely still under investigation. How about this story also out of the state of Florida? Three men now face federal charges after they tried to kidnap a person in South Florida. But the problem is they kidnapped and tortured the wrong person. And now the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of Florida has identified brothers Jeffrey and Jonathan Arista, ages 32 and 29, after they kidnapped someone with help from a man named Raymond Gomez. Instead of nabbing their intended target, these three men kidnapped the wrong person outside of the victim's apartment. And when the suspects arrived at an Airbnb in Plantation, Florida, they had realized their error, but the attorney's office said instead of releasing the victim, they waterboarded their captive and threatened to kill the victim while pointing firearms, tasers, and an electric drill at the kidnapped victim. Officials said the men forced the victim to go to a Pompano Beach business to lure the actual target, but instead the victim called law enforcement, and all three suspects were then arrested. That's pretty smart on this victim. I mean, that took guts right there. So they give him a chance to call up the intended target, and instead he calls up the cops. That's quick thinking. Of course, after being put through the hell that they went through, including waterboarding, I'm sure they had nothing. They felt like they had nothing to lose there in Plantation, Florida this week. We have more headlines to get to here after we take this quick break here on the Y'all Show, and we'll come back and fill you in on some airline news. Both United and Southwest Airlines in the news this week for some changes, and we'll let you know all about it. If you want to fly the friendly skies, you might want to listen up. We'll have that right after the break.
Turn the quiet up, turn the noise down, let this old world just spin around. I wanna feel its sway, wanna feel its sway, and put some feel good in my soul. Drank a little drink, smoke a little smoke. Want a little more right and a little less left. A little more right now, a little less what's next. Act like tomorrow's 10 years away. And just kick back and let the feeling flow. Drink a little drink, smoke a little smoke.
Yeah. Let's go to church now, thanks to Eric, the Church of Southern Conversation. It is a church day slash night for a lot of you across Dixie today. It's Wednesday. You got your old Wednesday night prayer meeting or wherever that's called. I'm fortunate, at least from a goofing off standpoint, that I have never been part of a religion that required or highly encouraged Wednesday night church. So I'm a slacker, but if you go to church on Wednesday, enjoy your time and learn a few things, like smoke a little smoke. Let's pick up our news headlines as we continue on this Wednesday Y'all Show. And let's tell you a little bit about some airline news. If you got a trip planned and you might want to hit the airports of America soon, well, United Airlines has just come out with a story. They're going to change the way you board their planes. Huh. I didn't know there were too many options on boarding planes, but United Airways is going to completely change this setup later this month. First class and business class passengers are going to still board the plane first as they do now, but then the changes start after that, according to an internal memo that was leaked on Tuesday about United Airlines. After certain groups, United passengers flying economy and assigned window seats will board first. This will cut down on the amount of times people's already seated have to stand in the aisle to let another person sit down. The new boarding process, known as Wilma, it's going to start with flights on October 26th, and Wilma stands for Window Middle Aisle. Wilma. Well, in window middle aisle, all window seat passengers will board the plane first, followed by passengers with middle seats, and then passengers with aisle seats. You know, this kind of makes sense. I mean, why didn't somebody think about this 150 years ago when flying planes kind of started? Because I'm a guy who likes to be, I'm sure I'm not too unusual in this, you want to be, if you can, on the aisle. So you can get up and get going and not feel trapped over there. Although it is kind of neat to look out the window if you're heading somewhere you haven't been while flying. And then if you're a fellow like me or a lady like me, I mean, I actually ran across a lady the other day who had the same height as me. And that's not easy when you're 6'4", to run across a 6'4 lady. But I did, and it was pretty cool. But you have to, if you're a tall person, you know the whole trick about trying to get on the emergency escape row, a little bit more leg room there, but everybody tries to get that now, I think. So, yeah, the boarding group for pre-boarding, if you want to pre-board on a United Airlines flight, customers with disabilities and unaccompanied minors, also active duty military, global services members, families traveling with children two and under, and premier 1K members, those who fly a lot on United Airlines. And then it goes downhill from there. Your aisle seats are next to last to load, and then the last people to get on board, carry-on restricted, basic economy, and customers with no boarding group number on their boarding pass. So you might want to check out Wilma, the new policy, if you're going to be flying on a United flight anytime in the near future. Now, Southwest Airlines wants to also make headlines, and so we've got a story about Southwest. As Monday, Southwest said that it will lower the number of flights needed to qualify for the top two levels of its Rapid Rewards program, and that's going to start in 2024. As Southwest Airlines is going to reduce by 20% the number of flights needed to qualify for its A-list and A-list preferred levels in its Rapid Rewards program, Southwest said it won't change the number of spending base points that customers can also use to qualify for either level, and it will make it easier to get those points using a Southwest-branded credit card. Again, these changes are going to start down the road. Changes will start in 2024 for travelers aiming to hit elite status in 2025. And Southwest, its move, contrasts with Delta Airlines, which drew criticism on social media in September after announcing changes that make it harder to reach elite status in its SkyMiles program. So some airline wars going on in terms of how they reward their members. Are you an A-lister? Do you fly Southwest? I know those who really like to fly, those who are business flyers and go lots of places, at least it was the case when Southwest was kind of getting going 25, 30 years ago. They called flying on Southwest flying on a cattle car. And I don't know if they would darken the doors of Southwest today, those same snobs, those airline snobs. Are you an airline snob? Hey, I'll take a flight anywhere. Get me out of here. It doesn't matter if it's on a cattle car or not. Moving on, let's go to a Murdoch family update. And we've got just the right place for you if you're wanting to start a new museum across the Southeast, something to perhaps draw thousands of people every year. It's a perfect, perfect museum, especially around Halloween. The Murdoch Family Estate, Moselle, is back on the market. And this property includes 1,700 acres of hunting land and the kennels where the Murdoch son and wife killed in 2021. And this property sold earlier this year for $3.9 million, and it's already back on the market. The house and 21 acres around it are listed for $1.9 million. Okay, so I don't know if they're splitting off the house from all the hunting land or not, but the house, at least, if you want to own the family house, it is available at Moselle. And it's a nice place. Again, the murder happened way down there at the dog kennels, which was a nice several-minute side-by-side ride. But you can go to Crosby Land Company and look up some more information on this very nice house with a very southern driveway coming up through the trees in Hampton. Well, actually, that's right. It's not in Hampton County. It's in Colleton County, right across from Hampton County, down on the Salkehatchie River, I believe, is just off of where this is located in South Carolina. But you can own that home that the Murdoch family had as their hunting home in South Carolina, and on that same property is where the murders of Alec Murdoch's wife, Maggie, and her son and his son, Paul, and now Alec Murdoch is in jail for the rest of his life, it appears, in South Carolina, in this case that captivated the country here in 2023. You can own that home if you've got a couple million dollars. You can put down money. All right, let's tell you about another crazy story out of Georgia. Chick-fil-A is where this happened, and the manager of a Georgia Chick-fil-A in the Athens area has had enough of bandits trying to steal used peanut oil, or at least 700 gallons of it, from a store dumpster on a monthly basis, as thieves have stolen more than 700 gallons of cooking oil valued at $2,000, according to a police report filed by the Chick-fil-A manager on the most recent heist, which happened over the weekend at the Atlanta Highway Chick-fil-A in Athens. Before the oil could be recycled, it was stolen, according to the Athens-Clark County Police Department. And a spokesperson with the department, Jody Thompson, told an Atlanta TV station that theft of the oil, sometimes called yellow grease, is not uncommon, as staff at that Chick-fil-A noticed that a lock had been cut off the back gate where the grease trap is located. From there, several hundred gallons of oil had been taken out of that. These guys rented a U-Haul this time and were able to siphon out several thousand dollars worth of oil The manager of that Chick-fil-A told police the truck pulled up to the dumpster and two men got out to skim the oil. It's unclear whether the incident was caught on surveillance video, but yes, stealing the oil, the cooking oil from a Chick-fil-A, as it can be refined and sold and it can be used as fuel, according to Officer Thompson. And there are several different markets for the oil that recyclers can use. So yes, keep that in mind. Restaurants will often sell their used oil to biodiesel companies, according to the Department of Homeland Security. A group stole $3.9 million in cooking oil from several eateries across three states back in 2019. So if you have enough problems, law enforcement, to worry about now, you got to worry about them coming in the middle of the night and stealing your cooking oil. That's another reason not to cook, I guess. No, just kidding. Could you imagine Chick-fil-A not cooking? That would really ruin a lot of people's day if that happened. Maybe they'll just have to use, instead of the deep fryers there at Chick-fil-A, they'll have to use the broilers or the air fryers. That's what I was trying to come up with. I wonder how good a Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich would taste if it were cooked on an air fryer. Yummy. Those are supposedly a lot healthier. You go first. I'll let you sample and get back to me on how good it tastes. When we come back on Y'all, we will jump into some social media fun. Some things have come our way, and we'll tell you all about it as we wrap up hour one on the show all about the South. From 1997, that went to number one, the last number one for Dinah Carter. She actually co-wrote that tune right there. How Do I Get There? The Goodlettsville girl, Dinah Carter. She was the Goodlettsville girl slash, I guess, she might be more Hendersonville. You know, one of those Sumner County towns is where she's from. I think it's Hendersonville now that I think about it. And she was Hendersonville before Taylor Swift got there, y'all. We're back here wrapping up hour number one with hashtag Hullabaloo. This is where we go on social media and dig up all kinds of great interaction with all of you Southern folks. And we have some, not Dinah Carter prose to talk about, but we've got Flannery O'Connor prose to talk about. And this comes to us from author Mary McFarland. And Mary's Twitter slash X account is McFarland Author, who in her profile says, I am not afraid that, well, hold on. Her profile says, my job, my life, my passion is writing. Hashtag thrillers, hashtag ghost, hashtag fiction. Okay, she's a writer, Mary McFarland. And guess what? Mary, she's on X writing about writers, okay? And here's what she wrote. She says, I am not afraid that the book will be controversial. I am afraid if it will not be Flannery O'Connor. That's a quote from Flannery O'Connor. I'm not afraid that the book will be controversial. I am afraid it will not be. Okay, thank you, Mary McFarland, for sharing that Flannery O'Connor quote. So if you aren't all up on Flannery O'Connor, let me tell you just a little bit about this Georgia writer who lived from 1925 until 1964, so she didn't even live to be 40 years young. She was a novelist, a short story writer, and an essayist. She wrote 2 novels and 31 short stories, and she wrote a bunch of reviews and commentaries as well. She was born in Savannah, and she wrote in the sardonic Southern Gothic style, and she relied heavily on the South in her writing, and often it's violent situations. Mary Flannery O'Connor, again, born in 1925, she was a very devout Catholic, and much of her writing reflected her Roman Catholic faith, and she often examined questions of Catholicism and also morality and ethics. Flannery O'Connor, if you haven't checked out her lately, you should. She was born in Savannah, as I said, the only child of Edward Francis O'Connor, a real estate agent, and Regina Klein, both of Irish descent. And she says, as an adult, as a child, she was a pigeon-toed child with a receding chin and "you leave me alone or I'll bite you" complex. That sounds a lot like me. The Flannery O'Connor Childhood Home Museum is located at Charlton Street on Lafayette Square in Savannah, Georgia. In 1940, Flannery and her family ended up moving to Milledgeville, the old state capital of Georgia, in the middle section of the Peach State, and that's where she lived out her life. She died in Milledgeville in 1964. She's buried there as well. Flannery O'Connor, again, writer of 2 novels and a bunch of other writing. You probably have heard of the name Flannery O'Connor, and she was one of our Southern 20th century writer, to the wordsmiths of that century. And she also had a really cool first name, Flannery, to go along with another Southern wordsmith from the South of the 20th century that we should all know a little bit about. And that would be Eudora Welty of Mississippi. Eudora and Flannery, 2 good names. Maybe I bet you there's some kid out there who has an English-loving mother and or father or both, and these people are big-time readers and love the greats. And I bet you there's a kid out there somewhere named Flannery Eudora or Eudora Flannery. Somewhere in Dixie, you'll find that. But thank you, again, to Mary McFarland to bring us attention today to Flannery O'Connor. And if you find her ex post, there's a nice little picture of Flannery O'Connor to go along with her praise of Flannery and that great quote from O'Connor: "I'm not afraid that the book will be controversial. I'm afraid it will not be." Okay, thank you much. So let's wrap up this opening hour of our Wednesday Y'all Show talking about something that's almost, it's almost like cursing. It's almost like the F-bomb when I bring up this same number of characters word. Instead of F blank blank blank, I'm going to bring up the O word here on today's Y'all Show. It's a word that it's just like an expletive for most everything I say or do. I would put this word here as it should be forbidden, okay? We should not be able to say this word out loud, okay? The O word. Are you ready? It's O. It's H. It's I. It's O. It's Ohio. Oh, that's a terrible word to say if you're a Southerner. Oh, gosh. Ohio, come on, man. I'll have to go to church now. I just said the word Ohio. Well, there's someone on X called Ohio Traveler, and this is a account, evidently, that promotes Ohio. Who would do such a thing? We're all about promoting the South. But I'm bringing Ohio Traveler up today because they're actually giving some love to someone who's going back to Ohio to bring a little bit of Dixie to that Yankee state, to perhaps the most Yankee of all Yankee states, Ohio, okay? So Ohio Traveler says in their profile, "Bringing Ohio fun right to your fingertips. Follow for awesome attractions, festivals, and Ohio so much more. OhioTraveler.com. Okay, I said it. Not going to talk about it anymore, okay? But I am going to talk about what they posted on their X account for Ohio Traveler, okay? There. X account post here most recently said, "Find Memphis in the heart of Ohio on the Eterian, I guess would be how that's pronounced, Eatarian Trail in Marion. Okay, it's a trail where you can go eat. Okay, now that sounds good. Experience delightful dishes served up alongside the Eatarian Trail, Memphis-style barbecue, Southern soul food, and then they also have other eateries in Marion, Ohio, for you to check out. So, because of this post, I had to go do some digging on A Taste of Memphis. That is a restaurant located on South Main Street in Marion, Ohio, and if you stop by there, you'll get a taste of the Bluff City. If they got barbecue, Memphis style, but how about this at A Taste of Memphis? They have mac and cheese with fries, and then they really bring on the 901 with three cheese brisket dip, and Mud Island nachos, all served up at A Taste of Memphis, not on Beale Street, not on Poplar, and it's not on Mississippi Avenue in Memphis. No. This is on South Main Street in Marion, Ohio. You can get that Taste of Memphis. In fact, it might be a little safer to go to Marion, Ohio if you want that Taste of Memphis, to be quite honest with you. A lot of our great Memphis eateries, there are some times of days you just may not want to, you may not want to travel down there, and that's a daggum shame. But it's the truth, y'all. So check it out. If you're in Marion, Ohio, you don't have to escape the South. It appears at A Taste of Memphis. And that wraps up our first hour of the Y'all Show. How about that Mud Island Nacho? That sounds yummy right now. Get some good rendezvous sauce perhaps on it. We'll be back with more Y'all. Hour 2 is right around the corner. Stay tuned. It's the middle hour of our Y'all conversation on a Wednesday, October 18th. How y'all doing across the Southland today? We got your Southern headlines and more covered here in this second hour. We will be telling you about some gossip off of Music Row in Nashville. Plus, how about this? A Nashville-based comedian is going to be on Saturday Night Live this weekend. We'll tell you all about this rising star. And they'll also give you in our headlines today how a Virginia teen has been named America's top young scientist. And this teenager got a pretty nice financial reward for having that honor. All that's coming up here on our news headlines section of this Wednesday second hour. Also, we have food to tell you about. We're going to be talking about coleslaw. That's coal, man. We'll have plenty of coleslaw talk. And the reason we're talking about coleslaw is because, you know, a lot of places serve coleslaw with seafood, like it's served with oysters and shrimp. And some places even have coleslaw with fried catfish. What's that all about? I'll find an article and share some of the findings about coleslaw paired with seafood in our Southern Food for Thought segment coming up in just a few minutes. Also, we've got a recipe for South Carolina slaw. What the heck is that? And I should know, but I don't know. I know a little bit about South Carolina. I don't hardly know anything about coleslaw. And I'll explain when we get to that section of our Southern Food for Thought. And then before the hour is up, we've got our Southern Business Spotlight. And there's some news today on electric vehicles. And we will go to Yahoo Finance for their conversation about the story that broke on Tuesday about General Motors delaying EV pickup production. What's going on with General Motors? All that is coming up in our Southern Business Spotlight later this hour. to text us here at the Y'all Show. We have a text line available any time of day or night, 615-208-4184. Email us anytime, day or night, mail, mail@y'all.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for listening to us. If you're catching us on one of our great radio stations across the Southeast, or if you're catching us in podcast form on options like Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Apple Podcast, Apple iTunes, and y'all.com, the South's homepage. We sure appreciate you taking the time to listen to us on the Y'all Show. Well, today in Israel, Joe Biden has met with leaders. He's spoken to the press, and he calls it a very high priority that Hamas release all hostages, and that includes dozens of Americans who are being held hostage by this militant group in the Palestine section of the Middle East. But today, Biden, who often you don't see a United States president flying into a war zone, but that's what he did, giving him credit for having the kahunas to go there and meet with Benjamin Netanyahu, leader of Israel. And I'm sure he's also trying to calm down both sides in this struggle after the deadly massacre that happened a few weeks back. And now we've got that hospital in Gaza that's been struck and hundreds of people have died in the hospital. And there are questions about who actually caused that horrible loss of life. More news coming from that today. More news coming from Washington, D.C., as they're expected today to vote again on the possibility of Jim Jordan becoming the next U.S. House Speaker. You had about 20 people vote against him on the Republican side on Tuesday, and he fell far short of getting the number that he needed, which was 217 to have enough votes to become House Speaker. Some people are saying that there's going to be even more people on this Wednesday vote going against going against Jim Jordan. And look, I think he may be doomed. I'm telling you what, I'm going to tell y'all what I told my mother last week. I'm going to go ahead and tell you the John prognostication of who's going to come out of this as House Speaker. Are you ready for this? And it's going to be a Southerner. I'm telling you, the person that I predict to be the compromise candidate for House Speaker is a Southerner, sorta. And I say that because he was born in New York City. But he represents Naples, Florida. The person that I expect to be chosen House Speaker, and you heard it here on the Y'all Show first, is Byron Donalds. He's a congressman from South Florida, and he represents Florida's 19th district. He's been in office since 2021, so he's kind of a second-term congressman, I guess he would be considered. He went to Florida A&M before going on to Florida State and has been a darling of media for a number of years. I really think this guy is going to be who Republicans coalesce around, and they'll choose him for many reasons, but I think one reason is pretty obvious in the U.S. House. Okay? So that's my prediction, and I don't know where Byron Donalds stood on the whole January 6th thing. I think that's what's really hurting Jim Jordan right now. You've got some people out there, like the congressman from Colorado, who just can't get past the fact that Jim Jordan has been coy when it comes to January 6th, and also the fact that Jordan is such a Trump person. And I think Byron Donalds also is a Trump person, but I think because of his race that I think a lot of people would look past that. That's how I feel. We'll find out if Jordan pulls it off today, but I don't think so. I think that number is going to grow to be more than 20 on this vote today, and they're going to have to start looking elsewhere. And the name to be on the lookout for on the Y'all Show, our prognostication, is Byron Donalds. Byron, by the way, is a sharp guy, a strong, tough guy, as Trump would say, 44 years young. He's got a birthday coming up October 28th. That's my brother's birthday. I should celebrate together with the two of them. It was also my late grandmother's birthday. Okay, TMI here on the Y'all Show. Yeah, but this guy is someone to certainly keep an eye out on. Let's see what kind of position he comes out of moving forward. He also had been in the Tea Party movement before getting into Congress. Byron Donalds, a name that I project will be the next U.S. House Speaker. Okay? Look out, Dana Bash. Dana, that's how. It's not Dana. Her name is Dana Bash on CNN. Look out, Sean Hannity. You got competition coming from right here on the Y'all Show for breaking gossip, okay? All right, let's get back into some non-gossip news on today's Y'all Show. And let's tell you about how in the state of Georgia, if you get stopped here soon by a cop and you're a Georgia resident, you have a very good reason not to have your driver's license. How about this story? This is pretty 21st century, y'all. So Georgia can now give you a driver's license and ID card on your smartphone. Android users can now store their license and ID card on that Android. And once they have that, customers can securely present their digital driver's license or ID using Android smartphones at select TSA pre-check security checkpoints around the country. Okay, maybe you can't use this when you get stopped by a trooper. DDS, the Department of Driver Services, reminds customers that a Georgia digital driver's license or ID in their Google Wallet is voluntary, comes at no additional cost, and customers must continue to always carry their physical driver's license or ID with them. Dang it! That's what I was hoping some of you would say. I don't have to carry my driver's license anymore. I can just use this digital thing. Because that would have been pretty 21st century. I guess the next step on that is if you can't put it on your phone, then they'll do what we've always been told, where you have the incision on your arm and they scan a barcode on your arm or something like that. Is that really coming? God, I hope not, because they say that's the sign of the devil. If that were to happen, well, maybe smartphones are a sign of the devil too. But at least if you're flying and you're a Georgia resident, they're trying to make it a little easier to fly with your digital driver's license and ID card now on smartphones in the Peach State. Other states, are you listening? Are you? Because it's amazing how many people drive the highways, at least, and don't have ID. And I know that because I spend weekends watching On Patrol Live, and I watch cops and shows like that. How about this? This weekend, I was in a county of which was on patrol live at that time. I was getting a little nervous. I didn't want to knock on my door and have those cameras coming on there. What a great show. I love that show. I love those kind of programs. Do you? Do you like them? They really make you feel good if you're a law-abiding citizen. They make you think, you know, maybe my life's not so screwed up after watching this. One fellow the other day on Saturday's episode in Berkeley County, he was having a good time with his beer that day, it looked like. And it looked like he'd had a good time his whole life drinking up the beer of the world. But he had an expression that was a blast from the past, and I was pretty impressed that this old guy even remembered this advertising slogan from Coburg Milk. That is a brand of milk that hasn't been around for 30 years. But just like other small milk manufacturers at the time when they were pumping out milk and other products, especially in Berkeley County, SC, they had a advertising slogan called Better Than It Has to Be, okay? Coburg Milk, Better Than It Has to Be. And ultimately, Coburg would sell out to Pet Milk, and that's who has it in that area of South Carolina now. But this drunk was talking to the cop that showed up on his doorstep. And the cop said, well, how's it going? And this guy goes, well, it's like Coburg Milk. It's better than it has to be. And so it was nice to hear Coburg's name on national airwaves on Saturday. And I have a personal connection to that old milk company. My uncle was an employee at a Coburg Milk plant. It was a manager, actually, at a Coburg Milk plant. And sadly, in 1976, while working at the plant, he was murdered on the property by a guy with an axe. An axe murderer literally killed my family member. And I still remember that day like it was yesterday because it was so tragic and terrible, terrible thing that happened. But Coburg Milk, more positively this past weekend on national TV, getting some love there from a drunkard in Berkeley County. So that's our story there. And I don't know if that guy had a digital driver's license when the cops showed up knocking on his door in Berkeley County, the hometown of Monk's Corner, the hometown of Goose Creek. Keep those names in your Rolodex, y'all. All right, let me tell you about Mississippi. How about this story? If you are at least a female inmate in the state of Mississippi, well, you got something to look up for and look up to, perhaps, at least in Greenwood, Mississippi. As the Mississippi Department of Corrections has opened Mississippi's first licensed cosmetology school for inmates. So you can go to prison and learn how to cut hair. You know, it's not easy to get your cosmetology license, by the way. I've looked into it. I've looked into not personally for me wanting to do this, but just in conversation, I guess, with the barber when they're cutting my hair. You know, you have to spend a good 15, 20 minutes. I'd rather talk to them than them talk to me because I want them to be focused on my hair and not on the conversation. That's kind of selfish, but it's true. It's true. It's not an easy thing to get a cosmetology license or a barber's license. And so kudos to all of you who've gone through that. But the Mississippi State Board of Cosmetology has given the Delta Correctional Facility in Greenwood, Mississippi, the go-ahead to start snipping hair. After spending a year helping to organize an instructional program, there's a class of 28 inmates now that are going to go through coursework and more to get their cosmetology license while incarcerated in the Mississippi Delta. And once they go through this, they'll be officially licensed. And according to the superintendent, more than 50 inmates applied for the 28 available positions. Now, if they'll just let me go there and get a free haircut, then I may not be so critical of the Mississippi Women's Institute of Cosmetology. Not in Jackson. Not in the state capitol, but no, in the friendly confines of the prison there in Greenwood, Mississippi. I guess this may be a common thing in other states. I've just not heard of it. A prison cosmetology school. Sign me up. All right, we've got another story to tell you about. This is more on the gossip side of things. But in order to tell you this story, I first got to tell you about a text that has come down to us about this story. And we'll get to that in just a second. The texter here on the Y'all Show text line says, "Hello, Rawl. Hopefully Marin M. is moving to Mars." Okay, well, that's in relation to a tease I said earlier in the show about Marin Morris, the country music singer behind My Church. And she's had some other songs of note that have hit the top of the charts. About 2 months ago, Morris, the little squirmy Texan that she is, and I say that because she has announced that she's leaving country music because country music is racist and homophobic and transphobic, and she's out of here, okay? So after announcing just a few months ago that she's going to be leaving country music, there is another Marin Morris headline to tell you about, and the texter here says, "Hopefully Marin Morris is moving to Mars." Well, that's not the headline, texter. I appreciate your interest. But no, that's not the story today. The story today is that Marin Morris and her country music singing songwriting hubby, Ryan Hurd, are divorcing. So she's divorcing country music, and now Marin Morris, it appears, is divorcing Ryan Hurd, who has had a little success on the charts. In fact, they had a duet not long ago out. But according to a filing in the Davidson County Court, Marin Morris filed for divorce earlier this month after 5 years of marriage to Ryan Hurd, using the irreconcilable differences as the excuse on court documents. The paperwork filed October 2nd. and it did not come out in public until a People.com report. I guess it's People magazine. And court documents showed that Maren Morris and Ryan Hurd had completed a parenting seminar, and that's intended in Tennessee to educate parents on the emotional toll a divorce can have on children. They have one child together, a three-year-old son named Hayes Andrew Hurd. But Maren Morris now, after her singing career, has kind of stalled out, and now she's out here saying that she's going to be leaving country music because it's racist and homophobic and transphobic. You know, it's not that way unless you get in a fight with Jason Aldean's wife, Maren. She's divorcing Ryan Hurd. It looks like she's the one pushing for this, the mother of one. So sad news out of Nashville, at least when it comes to Ryan Hurd. And we wish them the best. Divorce is not fun, but it would make a nice country music hit song. Talking about it, if you want to, there. Okay, elsewhere in our news headlines of the Southeast today, let me tell you about another Nashville story. This is not in terms of music, but it's got to do with comedy. Nate Bargatze is a comedian out of Nashville, and he's going to be hosting Saturday Night Live this weekend. How about that? Live from New York. Is that Saturday Night Live's open? Yeah, it's Saturday Night Live. Yeah. Bargatze will be hosting. Okay, it's not this weekend. It's October 28th. And the Foo Fighters will also be on the show that night. This guy, Bargatze, is a Nashville native that's going to be on his Be Funny tour, and he's going to be taking a break from it to host Saturday Night Live. It's the Grammy-nominated stand-up comedian's first time hosting SNL. So we wish him all the best. Bargatze said that being on SNL and hosting is beyond a dream come true. So good job on this great success for a comedian from Old Hickory in the Nashville area. Old Hickory, if you don't know where that is, it's sort of northeast of downtown Nashville. And Old Hickory is kind of near DuPont. You're getting real Metro Nashville when you start throwing terms out like that. But, yeah, he is a rising comedian, Nate Bargatze, and he's hosting SNL in a handful of days. So make sure you set your VCR, okay? Congratulations to Herman Beckley, a 14-year-old Virginian and a ninth grader at W.T. Woodson High School in Fairfax County, as little Herman has been named America's top young scientist. And he won 3M's Young Scientist Challenge. How about what Herman Bacali did? The 14-year-old got $25,000 for this prestigious award, by the way, as he has developed a soap that treats skin cancer, and he's been working on it for the last 8 months, and it's a compound-based bar of soap that uses a cancer-fighting agent, soap bases, and different drugs and chemicals to help treat different forms of skin cancer. And Mr. Bacali has won the 3M Young Scientist Challenge Award for this effort to fight skin cancer with a special soap that he has helped develop. A ninth grader at W.T. Woodson High School in Fairfax County, Virginia. Congratulations to 14-year-old Herman Bacali. Good job. You know, maybe there is hope out there for our little ones. Oh, bless his heart. Congratulations. All right, let's check out our text line one more time. Let's see here. Okay, somebody's saying wise things about Maren Morris. I'm going to be a gentleman and not talk about it during this time of turmoil within the Hurd / Morris household, okay? We'll just leave that one where it is, all right? But we do appreciate the feedback here on the Y'all Show. When we come back, we're going to continue on. We got coleslaw on our mind. Have y'all had some good coleslaw? Well, do you pair coleslaw with seafood? Well, there's a lot of places that do that. What is the reason behind that? Plus, we've got a South Carolina coleslaw recipe that we'll be sharing with you. That's coming right up. Ooh.
sit around and play. Gonna hit balls off the dock, kick back in my flip-flops. Don't owe nothing to the lender, nothing spinning in the blender. The only thing on my agenda is beers and sunshine, bonfires in summertime, back porch nights in South Carolina. Ain't nothing finer than me and my girls striking up a little lighter. Cause everybody's down in a world all crazy. Don't know how to fix it, but I think maybe turn on the good times, turn off the TV. Yeah, the only BS I need is beers and sunshine.
I was just down the road from Hollywood, South Carolina the other day. That's the hometown of one Darius Rucker. And I didn't have sunshine, nor did I have beers when I was hanging out at Bowens Island having some delicious fried shrimp, hush puppies, and some good sweet tea there on that beautiful spot just off of Folly Beach, South Carolina. I've told you about it already a couple times. I'm sure y'all probably getting tired of hearing me talk about it, but it is truly an awesome little place, one of our greatest places. I'm going to put it in the category of one of the coolest, neatest places in the Southeast. You got to go check it out sometime. Just make sure you go in a vehicle that's got some elevation, because if you catch it at high tide like I did, you're going to have a lot of mud puddles out in the parking lot and going down the road, the dirt road, by the way, to get to Bowens Island Restaurant. But boy, is it good, especially if you like oysters, man. But I don't eat oysters right now. I'm all about fried shrimp. But in my time at Bowens Island, not only did I get the delicious shrimp and the great fries that went along with them and the hush puppies, but they also included something that I'm not necessarily the world's biggest fan of, but I bet you a lot of you out there enjoy this. And so as a salute to Bowens Island today, as a salute to restaurants around the Southeast that have seafood, I am going to go take a deep dive into a major question that's been looming here on the show for a long time. Why do we have coleslaw a lot of times with seafood? Well, what's that all about? Okay, so I have found an article at a NewYorkFoodie.com. Okay, nothing says credibility like something titled a NewYorkFoodie.com. But they're the ones that have the story. I'm going to talk about it, okay? They have an article written by Sandy there on that site called The Delicious History of Coleslaw and Why It's Served with Fish and Chips. So, we don't really call it fish and chips down here in Dixie, sweetheart. But we know where you're coming from. As coleslaw is a salad made from shredded cabbage and other veggies, usually with a creamy dressing involved with it. And it's a popular side dish in the United States, often served with fried shrimp and other seafood items. And the reason, according to Sandy, that coleslaw is used so much is its tangy dressing complements the rich, flavorful fish. Coleslaw is a delicious accompaniment to fish and shrimp as well. It's crunchy and it has a flavor. It's a flavorful side dish that elevates the classic dish. If you've never tried it, be sure to give it a try next time you order fish. Okay, there you have it. Now, of course, a lot of coleslaw includes vinegar. And vinegar is something often used with fish and seafood. And since the 1970s, curry sauce has also been a popular substitute in some fish items and coleslaw items. And that comes to us with Thai cuisine, according to this article. Of course, coleslaw in the South usually has mayonnaise included with it, and that makes for a delicious combination if you are into that. Now, I'm a guy, like most of you out there, whose taste buds have changed as I've gotten slightly older, and I am not a guy that normally eats coleslaw, but you know what? I should have actually tried it the other day when I had that little cup of coleslaw on my plate there at Bowens Island, because if everything else was rocking and rolling and was awesome like it truly was, then it would not have hurt me at all to throw in a little coleslaw for fun while having that. Now, I'm not often on the coast having fresh seafood and other items like were available to me at Bowens Island. Often I'm an inlander, okay? I'm a long way from the Gulf, and I'm a long way from the Atlantic coast of the South. So the best I can do for freshness is good old catfish. Yep, I can't hide my love for delicious catfish, okay? And so a lot of catfish joints have the coleslaw out there for you when you're eating that. I don't know. You know, what I do, my trend, and let me know your trends, is there something else besides coleslaw that would be a very good pairing with things like catfish? But I, oftentimes when I have my catfish, I love to get sliced onions to go along with that catfish. You know, just regular old onions, nothing too special about them. Just slice them up, put them on top, and then I really go all Southern on it by throwing out some good Tabasco on top of my catfish. Now, that's the complete opposite of having coleslaw, and that's not what we're here to talk about today, but that's how I do it, and I'm sure all of you have your unique nuances of how you eat your seafood. You know, some people have the lemon they stick on there, and they open up the lemon and pour that on their fish or shrimp, and it's just hey, if it works, that's great. I will tell you, though, this is not coleslaw related. I talked to the owner of that restaurant just off of Folly Beach this past weekend, and we got to talking about oysters, because that's what this restaurant is really more known for, even over the shrimp. And we started talking about raw oysters, and, man, you need to really stay away from raw oysters. That's just my advice. I know they're, for many of you, very delicious. But, man, they can kill you. And it's not the oyster's fault. It's the bacteria that's in there. So, please, if you can, take it from your friend, your pal, good old Big John, and try to at least get some steamed oysters or other options to just to have those oysters cook somehow, some way, instead of eating them raw is a far smarter option. This lady, the owner of the restaurant, told me that one time in preparation for cooking oysters, that she was handling raw oysters, and she ended up having a cut on her finger, and dadgummit if that oyster didn't cause her hand to get infected. And that's because that awful bacteria that's often in raw oysters can really be some nasty stuff. So I'm telling you, please do yourself a favor and just get it steamed. I'm not telling you not to cook them or not to eat them. Just get them prepared a little bit, because we want to keep you around as long as we possibly can. So there you have it, oysters and some coleslaw talk and some Carolina talk here for you. And in speaking of Carolina, since I was there, I tried to find the closest recipe that I saw that looked like the same slaw offered up at Bowens. And southernliving.com has an article that features lots of slaw choices across the Southeast. And they've got a recipe up called South Carolina Slaw. And as a native of the Palmetto State, I never had heard of such a thing as South Carolina slaw. So this is news to me. But according to Southern Living, they say, a good Carolina slaw has a sweet and tangy vinegar dressing, not a mayonnaise-based one. This slaw uses apple cider vinegar and two kinds of mustard for extra tang. And you can go find this, again, at southernliving.com, South Carolina slaw. According to the recipe, it takes 15 minutes of preparation time, and it yields 6 cups. And among the ingredients are thinly sliced cabbage, a grated carrot, apple cider vinegar, sugar, vegetable oil, Dijon mustard, and dry mustard. Remember, they said it had two types of mustard. They got dry and Dijon. And it's a very simple 15-minute process for combining the ingredients, cooking them, and then adding them to your favorite dishes. In fact, they even have a listing with recipes included on how to serve up your South Carolina slaw, as they have this great breakdown of counterparts for it. Barbecue brisket. You can use it on a cast iron cowboy steak. How about barbecue ribs? a barbecue mac and cheese dish. Yummy, yummy, yummy. How about slow cooker barbecue pork and a barbecue chicken burger? My goodness, I'm getting hungry all of a sudden. So check it out. If you're a coleslaw lover, perhaps a completely different way to enjoy coleslaw. Many of you, it looks like outside of the Carolinas, are used to your mayonnaise-based coleslaw. And in this case, they're wanting to give you a more vinegar-based, apple cider vinegar, in this particular case, option with South Carolina coleslaw. So we'll have to maybe pay a little bit more attention to our other southern states and give you some coleslaw options going forward, because I didn't realize this was just one little food item that had so much variety and used in so many ways, all brought up by me going into a seafood restaurant and having coleslaw served right there on the good old plate, and I didn't even eat it. They had to throw it away, I guess. Maybe there was a seagull close by that had some good low country slaw to enjoy for the evening. That wraps up our food talk. When we come back on the Y'all Show, we're going to wrap up this second hour of our program as we've got more Southern conversation to tell you about. We got some business news. What's going on with EV vehicles from GM? We'll have the report right after this.
City singers singing about how they can love deeper than the oceans, higher than the stars above. Well, I come from the country and I know I ain't seen it all, but I heard that ocean salty and the stars they sometimes fall, and that would not do justice to the way I feel for you. So I had to sing a song about all the things I knew. My love is deeper than the holler, stronger than the river, higher than the pine trees growing tall upon the hill. My love is purer than the snowflakes that fall in late December, and honest as a robin on a springtime windowsill, and longer than the song of a whippoorwill.
Here's good old RT as we wrap up the second hour of this Y'all Show for a Wednesday. You know, I'm not sure if Randy Travis is a Chevy or Ford guy. He could even be a Dodge guy for all I know. Heck, he could be a Tesla guy. Actually, sadly, we don't know what Randy Travis is these days. He's had that awful stroke, and he's really not able to talk very much at all. And, man, it would be awesome to hear him sing and talk and do more. But he has been, for the most part, able to get up and get going. I've seen him on the stage of the Grand Ole Opry in recent years. We wish him well. Tough battle that Randy's had to go through with this massive stroke that he suffered several years back. We're wrapping up this second hour of Y'all on this Wednesday edition with some Southern business news to pass along. And the big story coming out business-wise on Tuesday was General Motors is going to delay all electric truck production at its Michigan plant. And they're going to delay this until late 2025. That's a massive, massive announcement coming out of General Motors. As GM said, the change is to better manage capital investments and implement improvements in an effort to make the new EVs more profitable. Again, General Motors announcing Tuesday they will be delaying production of all electric trucks at its Michigan plant. And this is going to have maybe ripple effects. We've got the UAW strike going on. That's a negative for the automotive industry. Ford is also not necessarily going headfirst into what their original plan was with their electric vehicle production. What's happening, y'all? And then you've got the interest rates and all that going berserk. And there may be a chance that this whole everything gets put on pause, EV, because of the uncertainty. Now we've got war in the Middle East. It's not exactly the smartest time to be completely switching out the furniture, if you will, in our automotive industry. We've got a clip now, and we're going to go to this, where the folks at Yahoo Finance were talking about this EV pickup expansion delay. And let's go, as part of our Southern Business Spotlight, listen into their feedback of their conversation again from Yahoo Finance, some of their talking heads from Tuesday discussing General Motors' decision to delay electric vehicle production of its trucks, at least.
Another day, another new development that EVs are not doing so hot right now.
Yeah, you know, our head of news, Miles, was talking about how whether I wrote the same story over again, but this time use GM. Well, in this case, GM now following Ford in the sense that they are actually pushing back production of the EV Silverado and also the Sierra EV that they're going to make at this plant in Orion, Michigan. They said that they want to, quote, better manage capital investment with aligning with evolving EV demand. That's sort of the big thing there, evolving EV demand, potentially what Ford is doing when they cut a production shift for the Lightning. They're not seeing that demand there potentially. Maybe they're kind of like cutting supply, rethinking pricing, and maybe sort of changing the strategy. Maybe GM is seeing that as a harbinger of what they might see in the future. They're not going to stop making the truck. They're actually making right now in a different plant, but they're not going to expand as much as they thought they were going to.
It seems like being careful with where they're investing at a time where they do have the strikes ongoing too, right? Like just as far as GM only has so much money to go around, like all companies only have so much money to go around. And when you have less workers literally working for you and you're trying to think about how to be more efficient, maybe EVs just isn't the space of efficiency for these car companies right now, especially the car companies that have been creating traditional vehicles for so long, right? It's not like they're Tesla and they're cutting back on EV production.
Right.
So they're cutting back on all car production. They're still producing other cars. They're just saying, you know, we got to be a little bit slower with the EV thing. And as Prashka said, reminds us of our Yahoo Finance survey, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where people weren't that willing to move over to EVs. We were all pretty surprised by those numbers.
Yeah, the demand picture, I think, is very interesting. I mean, you're seeing on your screen now, I mean, 57% said they're not likely to purchase an EV in our survey, compared to 11% that were unsure and 31% that were likely. And some of the big concerns here revolves around pricing, revolves around infrastructure, driving range, another big factor there. And it makes me wonder if we overestimated how many people would be interested in EVs, and you know, the tax credits we can get with those cars. I think that all is going to factor into it, because right now with interest rates so high, a lot of volatility in the economy right now, spending a ton of money on an EV just doesn't seem top of mind for consumers.
Yeah, two big things you guys mentioned. So interest rates, high prices, those are sort of weighing on demand. If you get these cars are cheaper, they'd probably sell better, right?
Mm-hmm.
But a big thing I think is there's a bifurcation between your Model Ys and smaller EVs and your big pickup trucks. They're more money, huge batteries. They need to be filled up with power probably more frequently. And our charging infrastructure just isn't there yet. So I think there's more concern about that, whereas a Model Y can go 320 miles. You don't have to worry about charging.
So I was going to ask that. I mean, traditionally, like, we think of pickup trucks as kind of gas guzzlers, right? Or
yeah.
Is it the same for EVs? They take up a lot more battery, and therefore, like, range anxiety people, you don't want to get a pickup EV. You'd rather get a Model Y?
I mean, for instance, the Model Y probably has about a battery that's probably half the size of a F-150 extended range battery.
Wow.
And they probably get around similar range, but the Model Y will get a bit more, right, depending on situation. So you're basically, your efficiency is half. Meaning you got to charge more. It's going to take more. It's going to cost more to fill up the battery. So it might be the fact that just that use case of an EV pickup, not going to happen, or not happening right now.
Interesting to see how we've shifted over the last couple of years on maybe how big that potential TAM is for EVs, right? It seemed like you go back a couple of years and it felt like it was as big as anything, right? Just an impossibly big TAM.
All right. That from Yahoo Finance, their story about General Motors delaying EV pickup expansion as they are going to hold off producing at the Orion Assembly Plant in Michigan. And that's going to be, is that a game changer, perhaps, for the EV industry? Now, Ford has cut production for its F-150 Lightning. And Yahoo Finance, which is where we got this clip, the talking heads at Yahoo Finance there that we just played that clip from, a poll there from Yahoo Finance and Ipsos A poll from that group found that 57% of respondents were unlikely to purchase an electric vehicle. It's not looking good. It's not looking good. And until they fix that battery to be a lot longer, then you're going to see more problems, I think, and certainly a more hesitancy from consumers to dive headfirst into an electric vehicle. One other business item to pass along today on the Business Spotlight: Apple has launched a cheaper $79 Apple Pencil with a hidden USB-C charging port. Apple launching this pencil now with this port. It comes after last month's announcement that the new iPhone 15 would feature USB-C charging, and you can buy the Apple Pencil for $79. I guess this is a device that you can use to draw on your Apple iPhone, because other smartphones have offered something like this. Just don't drop the pencil, okay? But $79 is what this will set you back, and it's got this whole new charging thing, the USB-C, for all you Apple geeks out there, of which some of you like me maybe are an aspiring Apple geek. But the Apple Pencil, you know, between Apple naming all of its products after itself, and then you got Mike Lindell and MyPillow, I'm ready for a MyPillow-Apple merger. It's the new MyPillow computer. Would you buy one? I don't know. But they would sure market the heck out of it. And that is a look at some of our business items of the day. And that's going to wrap up the Y'all Show. So thank you for listening.